56 mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Genuine diamonds, baby.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Running out of self-control, getting close to an overload. Up against
nowhere situation. Welcome back, everyone. 8:03 the time, hour number two here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Wednesday, April 8th, 2026 edition. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Jay Hamm. We're broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Right now, 53 degrees, going to warm up to near 80 today. Beautiful. Some clouds, but mainly sunshine. Then tonight, 55 for your low, mostly cloudy. The week looks fantastic. The weekend looks great as well. Take advantage of this beautiful spring weather. Rain, not until maybe mid-next week, but always subject to change. Hour two of the program brought to you by the great folks at James Gattis Jewelers. If you're going to pop the question in 2026, you want to make sure you have the most beautiful diamond engagement ring you can find out there, but you don't want to, you know, pay a ransom for it, right? You want to make sure that it makes sense financially for you and your family. James Gattis Jewelers has that variety, from beautiful natural earth diamonds to lab-grown diamonds, and a price point to suit everyone's budget. They are your bridal, engagement, and anniversary jeweler headquarters and have been for 60 years. Also, if you're looking for a beautiful present for a loved one for a birthday, an anniversary, maybe a graduation gift, think about the watches and the bracelets and the necklaces and the pendants and all the jewelry they have at James Gattis Jewelers. Again, so much variety. Open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, Saturday, 10 to 4, closed on Sunday. James Gattis Jewelers, your family's jeweler at 4900 Poplar Avenue between Mendenhall and St. Nick, and on the web at GattisJewelers.com. By the way, just saw a tweet from, I forget who it was, but the number now, over 1,600 since the portal officially opened yesterday. 1,600 have already announced that they're in the portal. Rob Wright, the point guard from BYU, one of the latest to jump into the portal. Time now to continue the conversation about the Grizzlies, the draft, their future. We do so with DeMichael Cole.
Two watches, that's 12. Come through and slam on you. I'm in the air. Boys, I said it done.
It's time to talk some Grizzlies basketball. Joining Greg and Eli is DeMichael Cole, Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Here's DeMichael with Greg and Eli.
He is DeMichael Cole, the Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal, the co-host of the Locked On Grizz podcast, and an all-around great guy. You can follow him on Twitter at DeMichael C. Good morning. You there, DeMichael?
Yep. Good morning. Good morning.
How are you? Doing fantastic. Hope you're doing well. Final week of the regular season. I'm sure that's a big sigh of relief for you to some regards. But you know, I was saying yesterday, I think it's going to be really interesting on, I assume, Monday when the Zach Kleiman presser will come and to hear what he has to say about moving forward, the draft, Ja. I don't know how open he'll be, but I'm sure everybody's going to be waiting with bated breath what he has to say.
Yeah, he's going to be kind of the storyline person on that day. You know, when the interviews get here, you know, this is going to be the first time he's going to speak after the season where it's clear that the team is going in a different direction and people are going to want to hear him illustrate what that direction will look like.
We were just talking to end the first hour about the fact that the Grizzlies organization, whether it be Kleiman or Wexler, obviously Para, the buck stops with Big Bobby, that nobody has said anything. They've not said one word. They've not uttered one consonant or vowel about the LeBron James thing and other things that have been said about the city, about the organization. Do you think, as we do, that somebody should speak up, say something?
Yeah. You know, it would be a little refreshing here, and it's kind of not the Grizzlies' way. Mm-hmm. You know, when they've taken shots in the past, you know, they've kind of, you know, took the high road as well. But yeah, this one just feels a little bit different.
What do you, what, What do you think about all of the stuff that has gone on around the LeBron comments and other people that have come in on both sides of things, and then LeBron still not even understanding why people were upset in the first place and doubling down with his, I mean, there's places I just don't like to play. What do you think of this whole situation and what it's grown into?
Yeah, after a while, I just stopped paying so much attention to it, because if people don't get it, they just won't get it. Like, you know, one of those things when I was a young kid that was hard for me to understand, and people used to tell me was, you know, DeMichael, you can't make everybody happy.
Right.
And in this case, you're not going to get the entire world to understand why, you know, Memphians and locals are agitated by what he said. You have people questioning, you know, like the standpoint that he may have been joking because he was on a golf course and the comments shouldn't be taken serious. You have people focusing on the hotel comments and really kind of like making the conversation about the hotels and Memphis hotels. So it's like people are just missing the mark, and it's not a progressive conversation. You know, it's not a conversation that it feels like is really getting somewhere to the point where we should be focusing on, you know, Memphis and what the Grizzlies, you know, made to Memphis, and then you build the conversation from there and talking about, okay, these infrastructures in Memphis or around the downtown area or, you know, around where the Grizzlies play, around FedEx Forum, in FedEx Forum, need to improve in order to, you know, to make it a better experience for NBA players, for fans in Memphis. That is the way the conversation should go, but unfortunately, it's not.
Yeah, look, I think you're absolutely right about that. You know, one thing is a former NBA player saying that, oh, he turned on the faucet in the hotel and the water was brown, or Draymond Green opening his mouth. But it's LeBron James. And when LeBron James says it and they're laughing while playing golf and poking fun at Memphis, and I went off here on this show about the fact that you're not looking at the big picture, Bron. You're not looking at people that will lose jobs and not have maybe employment and pay the bills because they are out of a job because the team is gone if they actually had moved to Nashville. I mean, he's not thinking about those things. And then when given the chance to really explain what he meant, he kind of poo-pooed it and started talking about not liking, you know, I didn't say I didn't like black people or something like that. It just, yeah. I don't think he got it. I don't think he understood that. But the fact of the matter is, and you're right, we got to move on, and now everybody's got to make a comment about Memphis, whether it's pro or anti. But the thing is, it was LeBron. And LeBron's got a lot of, you know, he's got a lot of swag. He's got a lot of pull. He's got a lot of power.
Yeah, LeBron's got some motion. You know, so when he talks, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, it's a little bit different than what Draymond Green said, what he said, or even to a lesser degree, you know, Anthony Edwards basically talked about the hotels. Or
right.
What he said. So it's a little bit different when LeBron talks. But yeah, he kind of got defensive. And at that point, again, I just shook my head because it was like he kind of missed the mark there. He didn't understand what, you know, was really kind of irritating people about his comments, because he, rightfully so, if you feel like people are focused on the hotels, then I think you have a point to be frustrated.
Right.
Because I would be. I mean, I go to a bunch of these different cities, and I'm not staying in 5-star hotels or not, but at the same time, you know, I have preferable hotels when I go to different cities. And I say, oh, okay, we're going to Salt Lake City. Okay, I like the hotel there. Oh, we're going to San Francisco. They have some really good hotels. Oh, we're going to, you know, certain cities. I say, okay, the hotels right by the arena are a little bit more expensive, so I probably have to stay a little bit further out or whatever the case may be. Like, we all have preferences for whatever reasons in whatever way. So that's fine, but that's not the conversation. That's not the point of the conversation.
Right, exactly.
You had a chance the other night before the game to talk to some of the injured guys who are done for the year, with Zach Edey and Santi and Jalen Wells and
Pippen,
Scottie Pippen Jr. Anything that you kind of really got out of those conversations?
The main thing is when you want to kind of sum up all the guys together, it was just where they stand, you know, with their injuries. I think Jalen Wells said June 23rd.
Right. Yeah, he was very specific, which was just funny to hear a guy say a specific date.
At 11:06.
This is my day.
this far out, right? Yeah, he's got his mind set on it. But with that being said, hearing him and then I think Scotty, you know, we saw with his last procedure, we know it's probably going to be, you know, 3 months or so. It seems like those guys, in particular, in Santi, you know, are going to get a decent amount of their off season to not just rehab, but to, you know, work on their game, you know, as well, which is important because I think with Zach Edey, he's going to spend so much of his offseason rehabbing. You know, we're going to get to a point where next preseason we're going to be asking him, how much did you get a chance to improve your game, given the fact that a lot of the offseason was rehabbing. You know, he's not going to play, you know, with Team Canada. I think that was something before this season he was probably planning on doing this summer. You know, he's definitely not going to play in the summer league. I think that was one of the main takeaways, and then focusing on Zach Edey of all the guys, because he's a guy that, again, there's a possibility that he could be considered one of the franchise cornerstones. He could be, you know, a guy that this team says, that's a piece that we feel like we can win a championship with, and now let's add around that. He can be one of those players. Not saying he's going to be the focal point, but he can be a core piece. Based on the direction that the Grizzlies are going, and he likes the sound of it. You know, when he was asked about the future of the team, he kind of paused a little bit. And for a second, you know, I thought he was going to give like the Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson answer and say, oh, you know, maybe we should have kept these guys together or whatnot. So when he paused, I was like, oh boy. But then he said, you know, I like the new direction. And then he says, it's more opportunities for me. I said, okay, big fella wants the ball. That's what that is. Big fella. He's throwing up 13 and 11 right now. Big fella wants to average 18 and 12. So I think, you know, it's going to be a bigger opportunity for him. And I think that's something that, one, he wants, and two, he believes in. He says this 11-game sample size, you know, kind of showed him that he can be a dominant force in the NBA.
It was probably a little surreal the other night against Cleveland. A Memphis team that is tanking, but certainly playing hard and well at times with these basic no names. I don't mean to put those guys down. They're all really good players, but to the point of they're not common names that people would know. And yet they go out there and they tie an NBA record with 29 threes and then lose in the fourth quarter. Still end up losing by 16, which is just blows your mind. 29 threes made, lose by 16. But it's surreal in that sense, but also the video I continue to look at, I'm looking at it right now with Ja Morant walking off the floor and thinking that, I mean, that quite possibly is the last time that he'll ever, and he wasn't even in uniform, but be a member of the Grizzlies in a game at FedEx Forum. I want to assume that you guys did not have the opportunity to talk to him after that game?
No, we didn't talk to Ja. After that game, I don't know if we'll talk to Ja again.
That's what I'm. That's what I was going to ask you. My follow up is: you think it's the last time that, you know, unless you're covering an away game and they're playing it on his next team, which again is the assumption he'll be on another team, and then you get to talk to him after the game. But that had to be pretty surreal.
I mean, I wouldn't say it was surreal for me. It probably was surreal for a lot of fans who you know, been there over the course of the years and you know, you kind of saw him throw up the peace signs and walking off the court, and it's like, wow, is this really it? You know, I was there, you know, in what were we at, Sacramento before the trade deadline, and I was thinking that at the time, like, oh, this is a possibility that, you know, this is the last time I get to see Ja with the team, with the Grizzlies, here in this locker room and so forth. When the team, you know, made it in Portland after the trade deadline, it was like, oh, look, you know, Ja's still here. So, I think some fans probably received it that way. And look, it's going to be a long off season. And the thing about long off seasons is we don't know when, we don't know how, we don't know where this could happen. It could be, you know, as early as like last year when Desmond Bane was traded on Father's Day. It also could be something that takes place after free agency or whatever the case may be. But yeah, we'll see. And you know, if this is it, you know, it was 7 seasons, and he'll definitely go down as one of the best to ever lace him up with the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. I'm sure that you'll probably eventually write about it and all that. But you know, I just wonder where guys like you that follow and cover this team game in, game out, know it better than anybody, where when you sit down and have a clear mind and you're thinking about it, where you put, if Ja has played his last game in Memphis, where you put Ja historically in Grizzlies lore? Is he 1? Is he 2? Is he 3? Is he 4? Is he 5? Where would he fall in with everything taken into consideration?
It's such a hard question.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Because, you know, when you think Mike Conley, when you think Marc Gasol, you know, when you think Zach Randolph and even Tony Allen, you feel like they got every inch out of their talent when they were in Memphis.
Good point.
You don't think, oh, man, Mike Conley could have did this, or Zach Randolph could have did this. Well, because it's like, those guys, you know, they reached it pretty much. Their potential was reached in Memphis. And then, you know, when you think Jaren Jackson Jr., early on, it felt like how it did later on with Ja. But eventually with Jaren, I think we know what he is. You know, we know he's a super skilled big who can put the ball on the floor, he can score. He's going to knock down some shots from time to time. But we also know, you know, he's not going to be a great rebounder, and he's going to foul. Things are just going to be kind of part of his career and whatnot. So you know how good of a player Jaren Jackson Jr. is and whatnot. So I feel like you can say Jaren got the most out of his talent. But with Ja, it's so different, because year 3, Ja was the most improved player in the NBA. And then year 4, you know, he has the Grizzlies in position, you know, to go to the playoffs as the number 2 seed, which they did achieve. But then Steven Adams gets hurt. Then he gets in trouble, you know, in March 2023 with that gun incident in the Denver area strip club out there. And then all that takes place. And then from there on, it's like no more All-NBA. I don't think it kind of derailed in a way.
Snowball.
Yeah, quickly. And it just was one of those things where you remember. I mean, guys, you really got to think back, because I was there. I remember when Luka would come to Memphis and it'd be a question of who you'd rather have between Luka and Ja Morant, as wild as that sounds now. I remember when the Grizzlies played the Thunder, and it wasn't even a question if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was on the level of Ja Morant. We weren't even having that conversation. We were laughing about the idea. I remember when Anthony Sain at the start of the season in the presser that we had with the players when they got back, and he said, man, they're saying Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson are better than you to Ja. And it was kind of like laughed at a little bit.
Yeah.
But you look at where those players are now, and those guys that I mentioned before, that Shai and Luka, like, they've all been on the up and up. So I took the long way to answering your question, because the heights of Ja were higher than anyone who's ever played in Memphis. So it's just, do you judge him by the heights, or do you judge him by the totality of the full picture? And if you judge him by the full picture, it's hard to say he's the best to ever lace him up in Memphis from the standpoint of the influence and everything that you take into account, like the team success. But, man, the heights were higher than anyone. So I'll say it like that. Ja's highs were higher than anyone, but I think, you know, when you say, man, what Zach Randolph meant to the city, the community,
and still does
that he put on the floor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and still being around the team, it's definitely a little bit different.
That was well said.
Quickly, last week after we talked to you later that day, came the Brandon Clark news. First of all, how surprising was that for you? And how do you think it has? How much of an impact may that have on his future with the team?
Man, it was definitely surprising, you know, to a degree. Anytime you see, you know, Grizzlies player arrested, I think that isn't anything that I've seen in my time, you know, on the beat. You know, we've had a bunch of different types of situations and whatnot, but players haven't, you know, been arrested, you know, since I started covering the Grizzlies. So yeah, that was definitely, you know, a surprise. And I think, you know, when I think Brandon Clark, like, he's 29 now. I've written more stories about him in the community this year than his performance.
Yeah.
Not just because he only played two games, but because, you know, Brandon Clark has his own foundation now. And, you know, that was something we seen with Jaren. He did it early in his career. We know Jaren and Brandon Clark are pretty close. And Brandon Clark, before the season, you know, did some community work, went to an elementary school. And then he did some stuff, I believe it was Boys and Girls Club, you know, some literary work and all these other different things. And it's like, these aren't events that are kind of promoted, you know, necessarily by the Grizzlies. These are things that you have to intentionally involve yourself in the community and get involved in. So, you know, seeing him take those leaps as a guy who, you know, really started to embed himself on a deeper level in the community, didn't see anything like that coming. But on the basketball side, I'll say this. Brandon Clark was already one of the guys who it's very difficult to see him having any future here with Memphis.
Yes.
Given, again, they're pivoting to this younger build. It's hard to see that happening, and this definitely doesn't help.
By the way, DeMichael has posted a story, and again, he finds these great stories even when things aren't going well. You're always finding something, and this Ryan Rupert, Adama Ball story, I haven't finished the story yet, but really cool about their friendship in France, childhood friendship, and now together playing on the Grizzlies. So check that out at The Commercial Appeal. Make sure to follow DeMichael on Twitter at DeMichael C, and catch him every Wednesday right here talking with us on Sports 56 Mornings. DeMichael, as always, great stuff. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, guys.
You too. All right, when we come back, Jerry Palm for the final time this season. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255.
Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Isn't it a lovely morning?
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Sparkling.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:30 the time, halfway home on this Wednesday, April 8th, 2026 edition of Sports 56 Mornings. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Ham with you, broadcasting live from the Family Leisure Studios. The national championship in college basketball for the men won Monday night by the Michigan Wolverines over the UConn Huskies. Jerry Palm was in Indianapolis for the Final Four and joins us now.
It's time for Sports 56 Mornings Weekly Chat with Jerry Palm from PalmBrackets.com. Covering college football and basketball, here's Jerry Palm with Greg and Eli.
He is Jerry Palm. PalmBrackets.com is the website covering college basketball, college football. You can follow him on Twitter at JPPalm85. And sadly, our final appearance from Jerry this season, but he promises to join us in August for another season once we get the contract signed. Right, JP?
Oh, yeah, that's right. You have your lawyers call me.
Well, how are you? How was the Final Four in Indy?
I mean, it was great. It's Final Four, and it's Indianapolis. So this is really one of the, as far as I'm concerned, the three cities that they should just rotate, San Antonio and New Orleans being the others. Because, you know, they're, first of all, they really know how to host this event and got walkable downtowns. And it really is a great host, and And of course, the NCAA's hometown, so it makes it a lot easier on them, too.
So you'd like just the three cities in a rotating
deal,
huh?
I'm totally fine with that. I don't need to be in Houston or Phoenix or places where, you know, like Phoenix is crazy. Everybody stays in Scottsdale, and it's like an hour and a half plus
I've done that.
To get to the, yeah. So, you know, and Houston is, they're just too big and sprawling. The cities are fine. It's just for an event like this, I don't think it's as suitable as those three.
Nashville will be getting in there soon. I'll tell you that once that new stadium gets built. I guarantee they're going to be going to Nashville.
Probably so. And that would be a reasonably good walkable thing as well, I'm sure.
Well, it makes sense, middle of the country. And I know New Orleans is south, but it's still sort of middle of the country as opposed to just strictly East Coast or West Coast. I think more centrally located makes sense, and all those cities kind of fit that bill. Maybe still a longer flight from California to Indy than it is from New York to Indy, but you get the idea. It's not one on an East Coast where it's a long, long journey for those coming from the West or vice versa. So that makes sense. But let's talk about what happened on Saturday first, because obviously we had a really good national championship game where the odds makers were right on with their prediction, but they weren't on Saturday. Those two lines were both 1.5. Illinois ended up getting beat down in the second half by UConn, and that surprised some people. It didn't surprise me. But the one that was very surprising, and even though I picked Michigan to win it all, I did not expect them to boat race Arizona. How surprising was it to be there to watch what Michigan did to dismantle Arizona?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. I mean, those had been, you know, those two at Duke had been the three best teams in college basketball all season. You know, they had separated themselves, and then Duke got upset, of course, before the Final Four. But, you know, it's just amazing that that game was just, you expected a competitive game, and Minnesota or Michigan just treated them like they treated everybody else in non-conference play this year.
Right.
I think their average scoring margin was like 25 points a game, thereabouts, in non-conference play, because they killed everybody. And that was continuing once they got out of the Big Ten and into the NCAA tournament. I would have never thought. In fact, I thought Arizona had a chance to win. That chance was gone by the first time out. They were just, I don't know what it was. Probably a hangover from beating Purdue. Yeah, they had to work so hard to beat Purdue.
What, going into the championship game, after having seen what Michigan just did to Arizona, did you give UConn much of a chance?
I didn't want to undersell UConn because I just think that that's a team that knows how to win this event. They're the reigning champs. You know, I was not expecting UConn to get run out the door. I wouldn't have been surprised necessarily because it would have been consistent with Michigan, but it would have been inconsistent with UConn. So, I thought we'd have, I don't know, I didn't know if it would be as competitive as it was, but I didn't really think we were going to get another 30-point win.
Jerry Baum joining us on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line. A lot of people like to look at the historical comparisons. A lot of people talking Michigan saying that one of the great teams ever assembled, as you mentioned, blowing out teams a good portion of the early part of the season, 40-point win here, 50-point win here, so on and so forth. How good does that Michigan team, in your opinion, stack up to other natties here, let's just say in this century?
In this century, huh? They'd be on a very short list of great teams in this century. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Duke's had some, Villanova's had some, Carolina. I mean, there have been some really good champions.
Sure.
Michigan was not invincible this year. They lost three times. They didn't win their conference tournament championship.
Mm-hmm.
From an NCAA tournament performance, it was tremendous. You know, just inside the tournament, you know, tremendous. I don't know how they would stack up with some of the great champions of, you know, years ago, like UCLA teams and, you know, Indiana undefeated in 76. Thereabouts. But, that was the 50th anniversary of that this year.
That's so, what they honored them at halftime, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, but you'll be surprised to learn I wasn't around to see it, the halftime part. So, But they were dominant, especially in non-conference play, the regular season champion in the Big Ten. So, you know, they're definitely, I would say, you know, top 20 national championships without going back and doing some research.
Gotcha.
Does, you know, a lot of people have made the big deal about the fact that the entire starting five is transfers, all of that stuff. Does that matter to you? Do you care?
I don't care. It's just the nature of the sport now. I don't think it makes them more or less worthy than other teams that have won.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, just because you got five transfer starters doesn't mean you couldn't win. It's just a footnote.
Well, to me, it means that Dusty May did not only a phenomenal job in identifying the talent that he needed to bring in, but that he knew that he would have chemistry among those five and whoever else was in that rotation. Because just getting the best players out there that money can buy doesn't guarantee you anything. It's being able for them to all sign up for what you're offering. And they knew, and Cadeau said it after the game when they were interviewing them up on the platform, that all the guys bought in. They didn't care about the individual statistics. And we hear those guys say that a lot, and sometimes it's BS. I think this was true. I think these guys had great chemistry. And you don't always find that, getting five new guys in there.
Well, right, and it's hard to, you know, recruit that way, you know, and he didn't get, like, the five best guys in the transfer portal.
Right, he got the guys he knew that would work together.
I mean, would they get Lendeberg from UAB, right?
Yeah, but he was highly rated in the portal.
He was highly rated, but Morrow was a cast-off at UCLA. My gosh, they made him a star.
Yeah. Sometimes you rise to the level of the people you're surrounded by. And, you know, they had a good lineup. They were big. Mara was terrific all season. And they're just, they were a lot of pieces that fit together well. And, you know, that's, you have to give credit to Dusty and his staff for putting together a team like that. You know, because you don't know going in how it's going to go. It's hard. If you asked him, did you know that they would gel like this? He'd probably say no.
Right.
You know, because you can't know until you get them on a practice floor how they're going to gel. But you do try and recruit to, you know, I need this role and I need this role and I need this role. And so you recruit to that. And then you hope it turns out. And it turned out. It was great. They were a great team all year.
So do you, as a Purdue guy, do you have, like, Big Ten conference pride in this run that the Big Ten is on now?
Yes. I wish it was us. But, you know, it was weird to sit there and watch the Michigan-Arizona game with Michigan just crushing them after Arizona beat us pretty good in the second half. We led at halftime, but they beat us pretty good in the second half. And, you know, 2 weeks before that, we beat Michigan to win the Big Ten. And the team that we beat was boat racing the team that beat us. So that was a bit jarring, but that's college basketball. But yeah, you know, I'm glad that Michigan is not very high on my list of favorite Big Ten teams, but I'm glad that people can now shut up about how long it's been since the league won a title.
I read a story, and I don't know if this is true, that Indiana could have had Dusty May, but they ended up going one more year with Mike Woodson because he was an alum, and they gave him the benefit of the doubt. Have either one of you guys heard that story, and is there any truth to it? Because
I don't know if there's any truth to that. They also would have had to eat another year of his contract, and that could have had something to do with it too.
Right. Because I'm just thinking, it doesn't guarantee anything that Dusty May would have won a championship at Indiana.
Nope, absolutely not.
But now the comparison's being made that, you know, Dusty May's the Cignetti of basketball.
Well, I don't know about that, but you know, that wasn't his first year at Michigan,
right?
But it wasn't Cignetti either. It was, you know,
right,
second year.
But guys that came from smaller places and just hit it big pretty quickly.
Yeah, Yeah, and it's harder to do in football because you need so many more good players.
Right, right.
You know, it's a bigger financial investment. You need so many more good players. So, you know, basketball, you know, you can, there's a little bit of luck involved in it, you know, for each of them.
Right.
To, you know, to get guys that work out, you know, not just work out well as players, but you end up with good chemistry, which you don't always get even if you have good players. So, but yeah, I guess it's a similar story that way. I just think it's easier to do it in basketball because you don't need 22 starters and a pile of backups.
So in between you covering the games and partying like a rock star, which you know you do, Jerry, did you hear any more about the expansion of the tournament, the 76?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it going to happen, and when is it going to happen?
Well, I expect it to be announced sometime in the next month, probably. It sounds like they're still putting the finishing touches on it. So the thing, Charlie Baker actually walked into the media room and got interviewed, and that was one of the many things that people asked him about. And he didn't say it was definitely coming, but he sounds like a guy who believes it's definitely coming. You know, it's a logistical difficulty because you need an additional site for the pre-tournament games, and I will never call them tournament games. They're play-ins, the play-in games. You need an additional site because Dayton won't be able to host, you know, however many games it is. Is it if they add eight, it'll be like, you know, 12 more.
There'll be 12
it'll
games.
It'll be eight more games.
Yeah, 12 games total.
Yeah, so...
Any idea where it could be?
No, and I don't know if they would try and do something geographically, like put it and say, oh, I'll just say Denver, for a lack of a better place, and, you know, that it would not be Denver, almost certainly, but Mountain Time Zone kind of a thing, so that they could send winners out west if they needed to, but which they will certainly need to send winners out west, and they don't like to send winners into the west region from Dayton. But they haven't really covered much of the logistics, and that's just part of it. And another part of it is the expansion will also go to the women's tournament. So we don't have enough NCAA tournament quality teams to field 68, really. I don't think, but 76. I mean, look at the bubble the last 3 years. You want to see any of those teams in the NCAA tournament?
No.
It was funny. Someone retweeted something that said, you overheard two Michigan guys saying, you know, if they expand to 76, that means Indiana would make the tournament. Who wants to see that? But that's true. This Indiana team, nobody wants to see that team in the tournament, and they were among the first four out,
right,
or close to it, mm-hmm. You know, and it's like Auburn was a game above 500. Do we want teams that close to 500 in the tournament? If you expand by eight, you might get 500 teams in the tournament. Who wants that? What's the point of that? Why play the regular season if you're just going to put all the major conference teams in, or all but the very worst? Then, you know, what's the point?
Well, that's the narrative that people bring up of why they don't want to see expansion.
Well, yes, because look, I've told you many times, I'm in favor of going back to 64. I already think we have four teams too many, and you know, if who's going to win anything among those other teams that are in here? So it's got to be some kind of a money grab. But if you're a TV partner, do you really want those games? You know, it's ugh.
Yes, because people will watch them.
Well, people will watch them. You know, I watched the first four, but
yeah,
it's more of a diehard audience and the fans of those schools than the regular tournament is, because the regular tournament is when the casuals start filling out their brackets.
Yeah,
so they're not paying attention to the first four. So the people currently watching the first four, those are the people that will watch these other games. But those aren't going to get anywhere near ratings of other games once you get into the real bracket.
Yeah, but True TV's running stuff we don't even know about at that time. So substituting it with for more first four games. I'm trying to think of... I saw somebody suggest a second site. I want to say Kansas City was a site that I saw brought up as a possible second site.
That would be one that makes sense.
You want a site where local fans will at least support these things, because you want some local support of these games, because you don't want.
Well, and that's one thing that Dayton does really well.
Exactly,
they have great local support for college basketball. They know how to run events in Dayton like this. Kansas City knows how to run events. I don't know about the local support angle for college basketball there. I mean, Kansas obviously a big time, you know, basketball program, and but it's not like Kansas is, oh, say Indiana, when it comes to basketball. But you couldn't really put it in Indianapolis. You have to go a little further
right,
if you're going to do that.
All right, last thing for you, Michael Malone, Nuggets. NBA champion, gets the gig at North Carolina to partner with the football coach Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Crazy times. No, I don't think anybody saw that coming until over the weekend. Eli said that all of a sudden his name surfaced after they got the Dusty Mays and the Tommy Lloyd saying thanks but no thanks. What do you think about that? Will it work out?
Well, there's a chance. You know, it's a guy who's been a successful coach. Coaching college basketball is a lot different than coaching the pros. Because of the recruiting bit of it, and mostly that's the biggest difference. Also, the college game is just played differently. You know, it's and when you're coaching NBA guys, you know, they have a lot of say in what goes on, and you're much more in control of everything as a head coach of a college basketball program. So it's going to be a lot different. Somebody posted on Twitter that the next hire for North Carolina is going to be Tony La Russa.
Yeah, I saw that. Well, he'll run an NBA system.
You say that it's different recruiting, but is it now? I mean, all you're doing is signing free agents in the offseason.
Well, except for you're signing high school kids, not
are
they? Men.
Are we?
Yeah, sure.
Not many of them are.
Coming to college basketball.
Well, you do.
Just saw the champion have, what, one freshman?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that freshmen aren't playing college basketball.
They're not playing the big
programs.
Those
guys run out of eligibility eventually. When their contract's up, they're gone.
and you sign five new free agents or seven new free agents.
Yeah, well, okay. But a lot of those guys are coming out of high school. High school players are still going to be an important part of college basketball.
But you're right. Eli's right. It's becoming more pro, but it's an adjustment. It certainly is. It's a different style. And Jerry, you hit it on the head with the NBA players. You know, you can't talk to NBA players like you can college players for the most part. I mean, Dan Hurley, who may end up one day being an NBA coach, would have to curtail his antics. That wouldn't go a long way with NBA players.
You are much more in charge of your program as a head coach in college basketball than you are as a head coach in the NBA.
Absolutely. All right, my friend, listen, another great season. We always thank you for what you're doing. The website is palmbrackets.com. Jerry will be back up with football and, of course, another basketball season and back with us every Wednesday here on Sports 56 Mornings. JP, I'll stay in touch over the summer. Have a great time with your family.
All right, thanks. You guys, too.
Appreciate it.
Fleet Feet, that's the place to go to get all your running gear. Go see them either in the Laurelwood Shopping Center in East Memphis or out in Collierville at Poplar and Houston Levee. Next to the Hueys, where they'll take a look at the way you run, the way you walk, and fit you with shoes that are just right for you, plus all your other gear that you need, everything you need. They've got it for you at Fleet Feet. Also, find them online at fleetfeetmemphis.com or on social media, where they'll keep you up to date with things they've got going on from their group runs and other things, plus races and stuff that they sponsor. Just everything going on in the running community. That's what it's all about at Fleet Feet.
By the way, Michael Malone's deal was announced 6 years, $50 million. So a big financial commitment to Malone. You're tuned into Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Available locally on your radio dial as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, it's easy to stay tuned to Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
To reveal the full spectrum of its dazzling color.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
I saw this on Twitter. I thought it was pretty funny. It's The way too early 2026-2027 college basketball top 25 presented by Pregame Empire. I don't know who they are, but this was retweeted from by Jerry Palm. So I'll go ahead and I'll give you their top 25. 1, Duke. 2, North Carolina. 3, Kentucky. 4, Kansas. 5, the Final Four team that brings a ton back. 6, whoever's supposed to win the Big Ten. 7, team that got 13 transfers. Number 8, Gonzaga. Number 9, UConn. Number 10, SEC team that finishes behind Kentucky. Number 11, SEC team that finishes ahead of Kentucky. Number 12, Arizona. Number 13, ACC team that's supposed to finish third behind Duke and North Carolina. Number 14, I love this one, random Big 12 team. Number 15, Rick Pitino. Number 16, Indiana for some reason. Number 17, Creighton. Number 18, team that will miss the tournament. Number 19, off-the-radar team that got a five-star. Number 20, team that will sneak into the tournament. Number 21, St. Mary's. Number 22, Big Ten team that'll actually win the conference. Number 23, team that hired a new coach. Number 24, Memphis. And number 25, another random Big 12 team.
That sounds accurate.
Isn't that funny? I love the random Big 12 team. But it is the whole thing with the expansion that we talked about, more than likely happening to 76. Who knows one day how many? There'll be 96 teams in this thing. Who's going to get in? You think it's going to be more of the Cinderellas, the mid-majors? Nope.
I'm with Jerry. Once we get to see everything above 64, you guys are playing. Everything, 64 and down, they're good. Everything else, playing.
Right, but you're going to get the random Big 12, the random Big 10, the random SEC. You're going to get more of the power conference teams that will get in. So, yeah, it's not good. You don't mess with, as I say, you don't mess with a Picasso. The NCAA tournament is perfect. Even with the play-in, again, they don't call it the play-in. I don't mind it. But I'm not into it. Tuesday, Wednesday, Dayton, I'm not even paying attention.
And I actually enjoyed both games on both nights this year.
Oh, yes. I mean, certainly there's good games.
I think, like, you keep saying it's perfect. Well, it was. Everybody thought it was perfect at 64. Now you think it's perfect at 68. You know what will happen 5 years down the road at 76? People will think it's perfect.
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, it's always subject to change.
What's the difference with more games on those 2 days?
See, I think it was... Okay, it was perfect at 64. So let me change what I'm saying. It's not as perfect with 68, but I don't mind it because, again, I don't pay attention to Dayton.
So you could still not pay attention.
Yeah,
so,
but that's
what changes? You just got to ignore
more
games. There's
12 games.
So?
That's a lot of games. So you don't mind going as many as... I mean, one day it's going to be 96 teams.
I don't... It
you don't care?
I don't think they should, but... I don't lose my mind. I don't think it's going to ruin the tournament. Like, people act like it's going to ruin the tournament. No. We just adjust and we'll go, okay, it's fine. Like, there's more games on those days. Why not? Instead of watching two games at night, I get now 4 games throughout the day, just like a normal day of the NCAA tournament. Oh, well. The biggest effect it has is on bracket pools, filling out brackets, because now you got like all of these teams that are filling in that line and trying to figure out how you do brackets. Like, that's the biggest challenge for me. Other than that, I don't care if they're playing more games on those 2
everybody
days.
Everybody understands why they're doing it. It's more money. And I just don't like change for change. Things don't always have to be changed.
This isn't change
life.
For change. It's change for money.
But for us, it's that's what it is. We're not affected by it.
It ain't change. It's dollar bills.
For them.
Point. Yes. Both of y'all made great points.
To me, it's like anything. We talked about it the other day. Don't change the formula to Coke. Coke's great. Don't change the formula. Don't change the formula to a... You know, they're always, restaurants are always trying to do things and change. Look, Burger King's trying to go now, trying to get rid of the king. It's like, no, the king is part of your lore. That's who you are. People either like the flame broiled or they don't like the flame broiled. You're not going to change it. People's minds either like that kind of burger. My wife hates it. I like that kind of burger. It's not going to change. Stop trying to change things when they've been around for 20, 30, 40, 50 years and have had success. That's all I'm saying. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. Hour 3. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.